Welcome to HN Pod, the daily podcast where we dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah, and I am here with my co-host, Mike.
Hey, everyone. It is great to be here. Today, we are covering the top stories from yesterday, July 29th, 2026, and this is episode number 472. We have a fantastic lineup today. We are looking at a wild new way to run massive AI models on standard MacBooks, a beloved e-reader project, a brand new startup from a very familiar face in the DevTools space, a super practical and cool use case for the Apple Vision Pro, and finally, a nostalgic trip back to the quirky user interfaces of the old school demo scene.
Let us kick things off with our first story, which really blew up on the site yesterday. It's a ShowHN post titled Open Source Engine Running Gemma 4 26B in 2GB RAM on any M-Series Mac. The project is called Turbo Fieldfare, built by a user named GitPusher42.
This is one of those projects that just makes you step back and say, wow, people are really pushing the limits of consumer hardware. So Gemma 4 is a 26 billion parameter model. Usually to run something that size, you need a massive amount of unified memory, way more than the 8GB you find on a base M2 MacBook Air. But this developer figured out a way to run it using only about 2GB of RAM.
Right, and the trick here is fascinating. They're taking advantage of the mixture of experts architecture. Instead of loading the entire 14GB model into memory, Turbo Fieldfare only keeps the shared 1.3GB core and the key value cache in the RAM. Then, as the model generates text, it streams only the specific expert neural networks it needs for each individual token directly from the Mac's solid-state drive.
Which is brilliant, because Macs have incredibly fast SSDs. The developer wrote this custom runtime in Swift and Metal to perfectly optimize for Apple Silicon. While the SSD reads are in flight, the GPU is already crunching the shared part of the layer. They're getting about 5 to 6 tokens per second on an 8GB M2 MacBook Air, and up to 35 tokens per second on an M5 Pro.
The comments on this thread were so interesting, because it sparked a big philosophical debate about how we handle AI memory. A user named Giancarlo Storo had this great comment where they said, "I always wondered why we need to shove the entire model into memory. I don't need to care who King Charles is every single time."
That is such a perfect way to put it. Why load the encyclopedia when you just need the dictionary for a specific prompt? Another commenter compared it to human memory. We don't hold every book we have ever read in our active working memory. We just recall the specific information when prompted.
Exactly. And while it is an active area of research to figure out exactly which layers to call and how to optimize that traversal path, this project proves that if you heavily optimize for a specific hardware profile, in this case Apple Silicon, you can punch way above your weight class. It is a huge win for local, on-device AI.
Moving on to our next story, we have a post that simply linked to KReader, which got almost 700 points. For those who might not know, KReader is an open-source document viewer for e-ink devices. It runs on Kindles, Kobos, Pocketbooks, Android, and Linux desktop.
It is one of those classic Hacker News darling projects. It has been around for a while, but it periodically pops up on the front page because it is just so good at what it does. It supports basically every format you can throw at it. EPUB, PDF, comic book archives like CBZ, text files, you name it.
It really represents that hacker ethos of taking control of your own hardware. A lot of people buy a Kindle or a Kobo and feel locked into that specific ecosystem or storefront. Installing KReader is like breaking your device out of jail. You get incredibly granular control over typography, line spacing, margins, and PDF reflowing, which is notoriously terrible on default e-reader software.
And it is a testament to the longevity of well-maintained open-source software. E-ink screens are perfect for deep, focused reading, and having a tool that respects the user and just focuses on rendering text beautifully without tracking you or serving you ads is something the community always rallies behind.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of developer tools and taking control of your environment, our third story is about a new company called Superlogical. This is the new venture from Mitchell Hashimoto, who Hacker News knows very well as the creator of HashiCorp, Vagrant, Terraform, and so many other foundational infrastructure tools.
Yeah, Mitchell teaming up with some other heavy hitters like Jack Perkins and Alastair Monk to build what they are calling a multiplexer for all work. They're starting with a terminal multiplexer. Think of it as a modern take on Tmux or Screen, but built for the era of remote development, AI agents, and multiplayer collaboration.
What's really cool is that they're building this on top of Ghosty, which is the incredibly fast open-source terminal emulator Mitchell recently released. A commenter named Simon Nguyen pointed out how great it is that Mitchell transferred ownership of Ghosty to a nonprofit and is now building his commercial company on top of those same MIT-licensed components, promising to upstream the shared work.
It is a very elegant way to handle open source and commercial interests, but the comment section actually took a wild detour. Because SuperLogical talks about integrating AI agents into the terminal, a massive debate broke out about AI code generation. People started arguing about Anthropic and Bun and that whole saga where an AI apparently rewrote a massive code base in 11 days.
Oh yeah, that thread got spicy. Some people were calling out the marketing hype, saying that if an AI rewrote it in 11 days, why hasn't it been fully released months later? Others were defending the Canary release process, saying it is totally normal to test a massive rewrite in production before a stable release.
It really highlights the tension in the developer community right now. We are building these incredible new tools like SuperLogical to manage our workflows, but there is still a lot of skepticism about how much we can actually trust AI agents to do the heavy lifting safely. But if anyone can figure out how to seamlessly blend human and machine workflows in the terminal, it is probably the team behind Terraform.
For sure. Let us shift gears from the terminal to spatial computing. Our next story is titled The Coolest Use for the Vision Pro, written by Christian Selleck. You probably know Christian as the developer behind the beloved and sadly defunct Apollo app for Reddit.
Christian and his girlfriend are building their first house, and he wrote this amazing blog post about using the Apple Vision Pro to visualize the floor plans. He said that looking at 2D PDFs just wasn't giving him a sense of scale. He couldn't tell if a hallway would feel cramped or what the sight lines would be when walking through the front door.
So he took matters into his own hands. He used Fusion 360 to extrude the 2D floor plans into 3D walls and ceilings. Then he went to the IKEA website, downloaded 3D models of furniture using a browser extension, and grabbed other household items from 3D Warehouse. He populated his virtual house to give it a real sense of scale.
But here's the best part. Viewing a standard 3D file on the Vision Pro is a bit clunky if you want to walk around a whole house. So Christian used Claude and Codex to, as he calls it, vibe code a custom Vision Pro app in a single morning. He named it Perspector.
Vibe coding is such a great term. He just prompted the AI to build him an app that included video game style controller support, a skybox so he could see a forest out the windows, and even terrain following so he could walk the actual survey elevation of his property. He even added a button to toggle reality on and off so he wouldn't walk into his real-life coffee table.
The comments were full of architects validating this exact workflow. A user named John Dixit, who runs a design-build firm, said they use this technology daily. They build models in Rhino or Revit and stream them to Quest 3 headsets for their clients. He said the response is powerful because clients finally understand ceiling heights and room proportions in a way 2D elevations just cannot convey.
It really feels like the killer app for VR and AR. Before you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars pouring concrete and framing walls, you can literally walk the space and move a wall if it feels wrong. Christian even put his janky 0% human-coded app on GitHub for anyone else who wants to try it. It is just a brilliant practical use of a very expensive piece of tech.
It really is. Okay, let us wrap up today with a heavy dose of nostalgia. Our final story is a blog post from dataguba.se titled User Interfaces of the Demo Scene. It is a deep dive into the custom tools built by digital artists and coders in the 80s and 90s, mostly on the Amiga and Commodore 64.
The demo scene is such a fascinating subculture. These were teenagers pushing hardware to its absolute limits to create real-time audiovisual art. But because standard software couldn't do what they needed, they built their own tools. And because they were hackers, the user interfaces were totally wild.
The post shows screenshots of things like Elite Sinus Producer, which was used to pre-calculate lookup tables for sine waves to save CPU cycles. The UI is just chaotic. Blinking red and cyan text, loud cuckoo clock sound effects when you click a menu, and fonts that prioritize looking cool over being readable.
And then there are the music trackers, like Pro Tracker and Fast Tracker 2. These interfaces look like dense spreadsheets filled with hexadecimal codes, but musicians could fly through them using keyboard shortcuts to create incredible chiptunes. A commenter named SuperTed talked about how intuitive Fast Tracker 2 felt, manually creating echo effects by copying sounds to different channels and offsetting the ticks.
There was a really funny tidbit in the comments too. A user noticed that the tools were called things like Elite Sinus Producer and the Sinus Creator, and wondered if they were making nasal-sounding music. But someone pointed out that sinus is just the word for sign in many European languages like Swedish, German, and Polish, which is where a massive chunk of the demo scene originated.
I love that kind of historical trivia. The post also highlights disc copiers like Xcopy, which had these great visual grids showing the tracks of a floppy disk being copied in real time. It is a great reminder that before we had standardized UI frameworks and material design, interface design was the Wild West. It was dense, it was hard to learn, but once you mastered it, you were practically a wizard.
It makes you wonder what we have lost in the pursuit of ultra-clean, minimalist interfaces. Those old tools had so much personality. They were built by the users for the users, without a product manager in sight.
Exactly. Well, that is all we have time for today. From running massive AI models on a tiny memory budget, to vibe coding virtual reality houses, and remembering the blinking neon interfaces of the demo scene, it has been a great mix of stories.
Thanks for joining us for episode 472 of HN Pod. We will be back tomorrow with more of the top stories from Hacker News. Until then, keep hacking.
See you tomorrow, everyone.